Chapter 9. There was complete silence in the room. Everyone stared at Mushkin as though they didn't understand him and didn't want to understand him. Ganya was numb with horror. The arrival of Nastasia Philipovna, and especially at this juncture, was the strangest and most disturbing surprise for everyone. The very fact that Nastasia Philipovna had for the first time thought fit to call on them was astounding. Hitherto she had been so haughty that she had not, in talking to Ganya, even expressed a desire to make the acquaintance of his family, and of late had made no allusion to them at all, as though they were non-existent. Though Ganya was to some extent relieved at avoiding so difficult a subject, yet in his heart he treasured it up against her. In any case, he would rather have expected biting and ironical remarks from her about his family than a visit to them. He knew for a fact that she was aware of all that was going on in his home in regard to his engagement and of the attitude of his family towards her. Her visit now, after the present of her photograph and on her birthday, the day on which she had promised to decide his fate, was almost equivalent to the decision itself. The stupefaction with which all stared at Mushkin did not last long. Nastasia Philipovna herself appeared at the drawing-room door, and again slightly pushed him aside as she entered the room.
"At last I have managed to get in. Why do you tie up the bell?"
she said good-humouredly, giving her hand to Ganya, who rushed to meet her.
"Why do you look so upset? Introduce me, please."
Ganya, utterly disconcerted, introduced her first to Varya, and the two women exchanged strange looks before holding out their hands to each other. Nastasia Philipovna, however, laughed and masked her feelings with a show of good humour, but Varya did not care to mask hers, and looked at her with gloomy intensity. Her countenance showed no trace even of the smile required by simple politeness. Ganya was aghast. It was useless to entreat, and there was no time, indeed, and he flung at Varya such a menacing glance that she saw from it what the moment meant to her brother. She seemed to make up her mind to give in to him, and faintly smiled at Nastasia Philipovna. All of the family were still very fond of one another. The position was somewhat improved by Nina Alexandrovna, whom Ganya, helplessly confused, introduced after his sister. He even made the introduction to Nastasia Philipovna instead of to his mother. But no sooner had Nina Alexandrovna begun to speak of the great pleasure, etc., when Nastasia Philipovna, paying no attention to her, turned hurriedly to Ganya, and sitting down, without waiting to be asked, on a little sofa in the corner by the window, she cried out,
"Where's your study? And where are the lodgers? You take lodgers, don't you?"
Ganya flushed horribly and was stammering some answer, but Nastasia Philipovna added at once,
"Wherever do you keep lodgers here? You've no study, even. Does it pay?" she asked, suddenly addressing Nina Alexandrovna. "It's rather troublesome," the latter replied. "Of course it must pay to some extent, but we've only just—"
But Nastasia Philipovna was not listening again. She stared at Ganya, laughed, and shouted to him,
"What do you look like? My goodness! What do you look like at this minute?"
Her laughter lasted several minutes, and Ganya's face certainly was terribly distorted. His stupefaction, his comic crestfallen confusion, had suddenly left him. But he turned fearfully pale. His lips worked convulsively. He bent a silent, intent, and evil look on the face of his visitor, who still went on laughing. There was another observer who had scarcely recovered from his amazement at the sight of Nastasia Philipovna. But though he stood dumbfounded in the same place by the drawing-room door, yet he noticed Ganya's pallor and the ominous change in his face. That observer was Mushkin. Almost frightened, he instinctively stepped forward.
"Drink some water," he murmured to Ganya, "and don't look like that."
It was evident that he spoke on the impulse of the moment, without ulterior motive or intention, but his words produced an extraordinary effect. All Ganya's spite suddenly seemed turned against him, He seized him by the shoulder and looked at him in silence with hatred and resentment, as though unable to utter a word. It caused a general commotion. Nina Alexandrovna even uttered a faint cry. Titsin stepped forward uneasily. Kolya and Ferdyshenko, who were coming in at the door, stopped short in amazement. Only Varya still looked sullen, yet she was watching intently. She did not sit down, but stood beside her mother with her arms folded across her bosom. But Ganya checked himself at once, almost at the first moment, and laughed nervously. He regained his self-possession completely.
"Why, are you a doctor, Prince?" he cried, as simply and good-humouredly as he could. "He positively frightened me. Nastasia Filipovna, may I introduce... This is a rare personality, though I've only known him since the morning."
Nastasia Filipovna looked at Mushkin in astonishment.
"Prince? He is a prince. Only fancy. I took him for the footman just now and sent him in to announce me. Ha, 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 ha."
"No harm done, no harm done," put in Ferdyshenko, going up to her quickly, relieved that they had begun to laugh. "No harm, se non è vero."
"And I was almost swearing at you, Prince. Forgive me, please. Ferdyshenko, how do you come to be here at such an hour? I did not expect to meet you here anyway."
"Who?
What prince?
Mushkin?"
she questioned Ganya, who, still holding Mushkin by the shoulder, had by now introduced him.
"Our boarder," repeated Ganya.
It was obvious that they presented him and almost thrust him upon Nastasia Filipovna as a curiosity, as a means of escape from a false position. Mushkin distinctly caught the word idiot, pronounced behind his back, probably by Ferdyshenko, as though in explanation to Nastasia Filipovna.
"Tell me, why didn't you undeceive me just now when I made such a dreadful mistake about you?"
Nastasia Filipovna went on, scanning Mushkin from head to foot in a most unceremonious fashion. She waited with impatience for an answer, as though she were sure the answer would be so stupid as to make them laugh.
"I was surprised at seeing you so suddenly," Mushkin muttered. "And how did you know it was I? Where have you seen me before? But how is it? Really, it seems as though I had seen him somewhere. And tell me, why were you so astonished just now? What is there so amazing about me?"
"Come now, come," Ferdyshenko went on, simpering. "Come now, oh Lord, the things I'd say in answer to such a question. Come, we shall think you are a duffer next, Prince."
"I should say them too in your place," said Mushkin, laughing to Ferdyshenko. "I was very much struck today by your portrait," he went on, addressing Nastasia Filipovna. "Then I talked to the Apanchins about you, and early this morning in the train, before I reached Petersburg, Parfen Rogojin told me a great deal about you. And at the very minute I opened the door to you, I was thinking about you too, and then suddenly you appeared." "And how did you recognize that it was I?" "From the photograph, and..."
"And what?"
"And you were just as I had imagined you. I feel as though I had seen you somewhere too."
"Where? Where?"
"I feel as though I had seen your eyes somewhere. But that's impossible." "That's nonsense. I've never been here before. Perhaps in a dream?"
"Bravo, Prince!" cried Ferdyshenko. "Yes, I take back my se non è vero. But it's all his innocence," he added regretfully.
Mushkin had uttered his few sentences in an uneasy voice, often stopping to take breath. Everything about him suggested strong emotion. Nastasia Filipovna looked at him with interest, but she was not laughing now. At that moment, a new voice, speaking loudly behind the group that stood close round Mushkin and Nastasia Filipovna, seemed to cleave a way through the company and part it in two. Facing Nastasia Filipovna stood the head of the family, General Ivolgin himself. He wore an evening coat and had a clean shirt front. His moustaches were dyed. This was more than Ganya could endure. Ambitious and vain to a hypersensitive, morbid degree, he had been seeking for the last 2 months for any sort of means by which he could build up a more presentable and gentlemanly mode of life. Yet he felt himself without experience, and perhaps likely to go astray in the path he had chosen. At home, where he was a despot, he had taken up in despair an attitude of complete cynicism. But he dared not maintain his position before Nastasia Philipovna, who had held him in suspense till the last minute and ruthlessly kept the upper hand of him. The impatient beggar, as Nastasia Philipovna had called him, so he had been told, had sworn by every oath that he would make her pay bitterly for it afterwards. Yet at the same time he had sometimes dreamed like a child of reconciling all incongruities. Now, after all that, he had to drink this bitter cup too, at such a moment above all. One more unforeseen torture, most terrible of all for a vain man, the agony of blushing for his own kindred, in his own house, had fallen to his lot. "Is the reward itself worth it?" flashed through Ganya's mind at that moment. At that instant there was happening what had been his nightmare for those 2 months, what had frozen him with horror and made him burn with shame. The meeting had come at last between his father and Nastasia Philipovna. He had sometimes tormented himself by trying to imagine the general at the wedding, but he never could fill in the agonizing picture and made haste to put it out of his mind. Perhaps he exaggerated his misfortune out of all proportion, but that is always the way with vain people. In the course of those 2 months he had considered the matter thoroughly, and had decided at all costs to suppress his parent for a time, at least, and to get him, if necessary, out of Petersburg, with or without his mother's consent. 10 minutes earlier, when Nastasia Philipovna made her entrance, he was so taken aback, so dumbfounded, that he forgot the possibility of Ardalion Alexandrovitch's appearance on the scene, and had taken no steps to prevent it. And behold, here was the general before them all, and solemnly got up for the occasion, too, in a dress coat, at the very moment when Nastasia Philipovna was only seeking some pretext to cover him and his family with ridicule. Of that he felt convinced. Indeed, what could her visit mean, if not that? Had she come to make friends with his mother and sister, or to insult them in his house? But from the attitude of both parties, there could be no doubt on that subject. His mother and his sister were sitting on one side like outcasts, while Nastasia Philipovna seemed positively to have forgotten that they were in the same room with her. And if she behaved like that, it was pretty certain she had some object in it. Ferdyshenko took hold of the general and led him up.
"Ardalion Alexandrovich Ivolgin," said the general with dignity, bowing and smiling. "An old soldier in misfortune, and the father of a family which is happy in the prospect of including such a charming—"
He did not finish. Ferdyshenko quickly set a chair for him, and the general, who was rather weak on his legs at that moment, so soon after dinner, fairly plumped, or rather fell, into it. But that did not disconcert him. He took up his position directly facing Nastasia Philipovna, and with an agreeable simper he deliberately and gallantly raised her fingers to his lips. It was at all times difficult to disconcert the general. Except for a certain slovenliness, his exterior was still fairly presentable, the fact of which he was thoroughly well aware. He had in the past moved at times in very good society, from which he had been finally excluded only 2 or 3 years before. Since then he had abandoned himself to some of his weaknesses unchecked, but he still retained his easy and agreeable manner. Nastasia Philipovna seemed highly delighted at the advent of General Ivolgin, of whom, of course, she had heard.
"I've heard that my son," began Ardalion Alexandrovitch.
"Yes, your son. You're a pretty one, too, his papa. Why do you never come and see me? Do you shut yourself up, or is it your son's doing? You at least might come to see me without compromising anyone."
"Children of the 19th century and their parents," the general began again.
"Nastasia Philipovna, please excuse Ardalion Alexandrovitch for a moment. Someone is asking to see him," said Nina Alexandrovna in a loud voice. "Excuse him? Why, but I've heard so much about him. I've been wanting to see him for so long. And what business has he? He is retired. You won't leave me, General. You won't go away." I promise you he shall come and see you, but now he needs rest. Ardalion Alexandrovitch, they say you need rest, cried Nastasia Philipovna, displeased and pouting like a frivolous and silly woman deprived of a toy.
The general did his best to make his position more foolish than before.
My dear, he said reproachfully, addressing his wife solemnly and laying his hand on his heart.
Won't you come away, mother? Said Varya aloud. No, Varya, I'll sit it out to the end.
Nastasia Philipovna could not have failed to hear the question and the answer, but it seemed only to increase her gaiety. She showered questions upon the general again, and in 5 minutes the general was in a most triumphant state of mind, and holding forth amidst the loud laughter of the company. Kolya pulled Mushkin by the lapel of his coat.
You get him away somehow. This is impossible. Please do.
There were tears of indignation in the poor boy's eyes.
Oh, that beast, Ganya,
he muttered to himself.
I used, indeed, to be an intimate friend of Ivan Fyodorovich Epanchin's,
the general babbled on, in reply to Nastasia Philipovna's question.
He, I, and the late Prince Lyov Nikolaevich Mishkin, whose son I have embraced today after 20 years' separation, we were three inseparables, a regular cavalcade, so to say, like the three musketeers, Athos, Porthos, and Aramis. But one is in the grave, alas, struck down by slander and a bullet. Another is before you, and is still struggling with slanders and bullets.
With bullets?
Cried Nastasia Philipovna.
They are here, in my bosom, and were received under the walls of Kars, and in bad weather I am conscious of them. In all other respects I live like a philosopher. I walk, I play draughts at my café, like any bourgeois retired from business, and read the Independence. But with Epanchin, our Porthos, I've had nothing to do since the scandal 2 years ago on the railway about a lapdog.
About a lapdog? What was it?
Asked Nastasia Philipovna with marked curiosity.
About a lapdog? Let me see. And on the railway, too,
she repeated, as though recollecting something.
Oh, it was a stupid affair, not worth repeating. It was all about Princess Bielokonski's governess, Mistress Schmidt. But it's not worth repeating.
But you must tell me, cried Nastasia Philipovna gaily.
And I've never heard it before, observed Fedoshenko. C'est de nouveau.
Ardalion Alexandrovitch,
came again beseechingly from Nina Alexandrovna.
"'Father, there's someone to see you,'
cried Kolya.
"'It's a stupid story, and can be told in 2 words,' began the general complacently. 2 years ago, yes, nearly two, just after the opening of the new railway, I was already in civilian dress then and busy about an affair of great importance in connection with my giving up the service. I took a first-class ticket, went in, sat down, and began to smoke. Or rather, I went on the smoking.' I had lighted my cigar before. I was alone in the compartment. Smoking was not prohibited, nor was it allowed. It was sort of half allowed, as it usually is. Of course, it depends on the person. The window was down. Just before the whistle sounded, 2 ladies with a lapdog seated themselves just opposite me. They were late. One of them was dressed in gorgeous style in light blue, the other more soberly in black silk with a cape. They were nice-looking, had a disdainful air, and talked English. I took no notice, of course, and went on smoking. I did hesitate, but I went on smoking close to the window, for the window was open. The lapdog was lying on the pale blue lady's knee. It was a tiny creature no bigger than my fist, black with white paws. Quite a curiosity. It had a silver collar with a motto on it. I did nothing, but I noticed the ladies seemed annoyed at my cigar, no doubt. One of them stared at me through her tortoiseshell lorgnette. I did nothing again, for they said nothing. If they'd said anything, warned me, or asked me, there is such a thing as language after all, but they were silent. Suddenly, without the slightest preface, I assure you, without the slightest, as though she had suddenly taken leave of her senses, the pale blue one snatched the cigar out of my hand and flung it out of the window. The train was racing along. I gazed at her aghast. A savage woman, yes. Positively a woman of quite a savage type. Yet a plump, comfortable-looking, tall, fair woman with rosy cheeks. Too rosy, in fact. Her eyes glared at me. Without uttering a word and with extraordinary courtesy, the most perfect, the most refined courtesy, I delicately picked up the lapdog by the collar in two fingers and flung it out of the window after the cigar. It uttered one squeal. The train was still racing on.
"You are a monster!"
exclaimed Nastasia Philipovna, laughing and clapping her hands like a child.
"Bravo! Bravo!" cried Ferdyshenko.
Titsin, too, smiled, though he also had been extremely put out by the general's entrance. Even Kolya laughed and cried bravo, too.
"And I was right. Perfectly right," the triumphant general continued warmly. "For if cigars are forbidden in a railway carriage, dogs are even more so."
"Bravo, father," cried Kolya gleefully. "Splendid. I should certainly have done the same." "But what did the lady do?"
Nastasia Philipovna asked impatiently.
"She? Ah, that's where the unpleasantness comes in," the general went on, frowning. "Without uttering a word, and without the slightest warning, she slapped me on the cheek. A savage woman. Quite a savage type."
"And you?"
The general dropped his eyes, raised his eyebrows, shrugged his shoulders, pursed up his lips, flung up his hands, paused, then suddenly pronounced,
"I was carried away."
"And hurt her?" "Hurt her?"
"On my honour, I did not. A scandalous scene followed, but I did not hurt her. I simply waved my arm once, solely, to wave her back. But as the devil would have it, the pale blue one turned out to be English, a governess or some sort of family friend of Princess Bielokonski, and the one in black, as it appeared, was the eldest of the princess's daughters, an old maid of 35. And you know what terms Madame Epanchin is on with the Bielokonski family. All the six princesses fainted. Tears, mourning for the pet lapdog, screams on the part of the English governess, a perfect bedlam. Of course I went to apologize, to express my penitence. Wrote a letter. They refused to see me, or my letter. And Epanchin quarrelled with me, refused me admittance, turned me out."
"But allow me. How do you explain this?"
Nastasia Philipovna asked suddenly.
5 or 6 days ago I read in The Independence. I always read The Independence. Exactly the same story. Precisely the same story. It happened on one of the Rhine railways between a Frenchman and an Englishwoman. The cigar was snatched in the same way. The lapdog was thrown out of the window, too. It ended in the same way. Her dress was pale blue, even."
The general flushed terribly. Kolya blushed, too, and squeezed his head in his hands. Titsin turned away quickly. Ferdyshenko was the only one who went on laughing. There is no need to speak of Ganya. He had stood all the time in mute and insufferable agony.
"I assure you," muttered the general, "that the very same thing happened to me."
"Father really had some trouble with Mrs. Schmidt, the governess at the Bielokonskis," cried Kolya. "I remember it." "What? Exactly the same? The very same story at the opposite ends of Europe, and alike in every detail? Even to the pale blue dress?"
persisted the merciless lady.
"I'll send you the Independence beige."
"But note," the general still persisted, "that the incident occurred to me 2 years ago."
"Ah, there is that,"
Nastasia Philipovna laughed, as though she were in hysterics.
"Father, I beg you, come out and let me have a word with you,"
said Ganya, in a shaking and harassed voice, mechanically taking his father by the shoulder. There was a gleam of infinite hatred in his eyes. At that moment there was a violent ring at the front door, a ring that might well have pulled down the bell. It betokened an exceptional visit. Kolya ran to open the door.